Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT News team.
And welcome to this week's Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin, and the Talk of the Rock studios have been invaded by tweens, preteens. There might be a couple 13-year-olds. There's a 14-year-old in here. They're yelling at me, but I have their microphones turned off because, again, they're teenagers. So, we're gonna get into that. So a special episode today on the summer youth theater program going on with the Kodiak Arts Council. A group of young actors is putting on a play called Game of Tiaras by Don Zelaitis, and so I decided to bring a few of them in to talk about the show and talk about their art and to talk about global domination. I think that topic has come up. So what we're going to do is we're just going to go around the room, since there's so many of you in here. Just tell us who you are, how old you are, and what part or parts you play in the show. So we'll start right over here with Bradley.
I am Bradley Bailey, and I am playing the king and a talking candle who dies near immediately.
I'm Esme, and I am 11 years old, and I play Sleeping Beauty, or Other Princess One, technically, and Snow White.
I'm Caitlin Shia. I'm 13, and I play narrator number 2.
I'm Mars Berbulis. I'm 13, and I'm playing Prince Charming.
Oh, I'm Kylie Eaton. I'm 14, and I'm playing the so humble and sweet Cinderella.
That was irony.
I'm Lydia Dagan. I'm also 14, and I'm Ellie. Don't you dare confuse me with the Elsa from Frozen. It's the Snow Queen to you.
Yes, we have to watch the copyrights on this. So, and why? So let's talk about the play. What is this play about? Lydia, you got this. Okay.
Murderous Disney Princesses.
Do you want me to emphasize
there might be a little more.
Okay. So,
but that's basically the
you
theme.
You know that one book you probably maybe had to read for school, King Lear? Yeah, it's pretty much that. Disney princesses, everyone murders each other, and it's really good.
Blood.
And Bradley, you have another take on this being the king.
Most of the events transpire because I was a little insecure about my feelings.
like most wars.
Oh, hey, Daddy! Air smooches!
Please do not do that. Look at that. I'm begging you.
They're already in character.
Please send help.
All right, so this is a play, and this is why I love to do. I'm directing it, by the way, so I get to work with them over the past few weeks and put this show together. And yes, it's as they explained, it's the story of King Lear, but told with Disney princesses instead. And so there are all, of course, being Shakespeare, there is of course death and also romance. But also
and
death.
Insanity.
And insanity.
And geopolitical ramifications.
Yes.
Say that 3 times fast.
Geopolitical ramifications. There you go.
Geopolitical ramifications.
So, what do you like about this show? What kind of drew you to it when you knew that this is the kind of show that we were doing this summer?
I don't think you want me to answer that.
I guess I'll answer first. I like this show just because it's everything I like in a show. The character I've been giving is very much in my zone of field of expertise, I guess. And it's a lot of fighting. It's a lot of choreography. I think it's just I get the chance to do everything I know in this show and be happy doing it. And it's really fun.
Well, and talk about this is not the Disney Cinderella.
It is not the Disney Cinderella at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, like... I like we said Shakespearean, go full Shakespearean insanity, mental illness, I all of that is in Cinderella, I'd say.
So far, undiagnosed.
Hey. Well,
it does take place in medieval England, so.
Oh, definitely. You know what was in the bread? I don't know what was in the bread.
And Esme, you how was your Snow White different than the Disney Snow White?
I die.
Do you how do you treat your dwarves?
Slaves.
Oh.
Ouch.
Ouch. Yes. That doesn't sound fun. And Mars, you play Prince Charming.
Yeah.
So talk to us about Prince Charming.
Prince Charming, he's fun, I guess. He's
fun. He's fun.
Take it from one of your possible suitors. You are ruthlessly evil and also very stupid.
Okay, but he doesn't seem to know that he is evil. Or maybe he does. He just
he plays
it
everyone,
well, so he doesn't.
Yeah.
He literally plays
in love with everyone.
He's extremely silly, though.
Extremely silly. Playing the field, as he says.
I mean, like, even when he was, like, he cannot commit to one person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's it. There's a Prince Charming in almost every Disney princess kind of story, and so he's got a Mars. He has to fill that role of every single Prince Charming for every single princess that comes along. And what are the other princesses that we're missing that aren't in the studio today? Who else is
Belle.
In the show? We have a Belle.
Ariel. Oh, sorry. A Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
Other Princess 1, 2, and 3.
Other Princess 1, 2, and 3.
Or actually, no, just 2 and 3. I'm here.
Oh, that's right. You're here. You play Aurora.
Are we going to count Smeagol as a princess?
We should.
Oh yes.
Smeagol is a princess.
Yeah, it's not just Disney. We have Smeagol.
Yeah, he abandoned his family largely.
Smeagol
is
the only person who can offend Cinderella, like, to her core at this point.
Excuse me.
No comment.
And you all were you were also talking about like what this might have been a joke too, Bradley and Kylie, about how is Game of TR as a metaphor for today. Like we try to do shows that have some kind of meaning for today and what's going on and help us make sense of the world. So
do you wanna go
how does Game
first?
Of TR help you make sense of what's going on?
I have one. This might be a I think it's a very like I think it's a cool feminist girls like beat people up, beat each other up, and that's cool. That's really cool. And I think it's very interesting when you get the dynamic with Prince Charming and the love triangle. All of that. I think the way that the two fight over him and also fight over the kingdom, I think it's really interesting how you have those like fairy tale stories and how it just all falls through and fail and like the consequences of that, like a patriarchal society, I guess. That's all.
Yeah. It can also show you can even there might be something that could end perfectly well, but if there's enough fighting, really either everyone's gonna die or they're not gonna care anymore because they're so mentally exhausted.
So I guess the moral of the story is fighting will just end up with death. And everything is going to be ruined for everyone.
The cycle of vengeance.
Violence is not always the answer, guys.
Not always.
Only like three or four characters don't die.
And Prince Charming is not your only meaning in life, guys.
Yes, he is.
Live to conquer the kingdom, not to conquer the prince.
Yeah, Prince Charming is annoying.
All I'm saying?
Prince Charming is not annoying.
All the events transpire
Yes, Bradley.
I mean, all the events transpire because one old guy did not hear what he wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's one old, powerful dude.
That's like patriarchy at its core.
Look at that. Yes. I dig it. Okay, so let's talk about you as an actor, as an artist, and kind of your process and how you put a character together. Most of you, no, all of you in here have done a play with me before. Some of you more than others, and we try to work on character and characterization and things. So, talk to me about. Let's kind of go around and talk about your process, Lydia. What What you had a very strong performance as Leanne when we did Puffs.
Hi.
Oh, Leanne is back, and look, and that is Leanne.
The noise readings went way up
yes.
when I said that.
Yes, that was a little more. Okay, so Lydia, so talk to us about the last play, the first play that you were in. You played a very comedic character. This time around, you were not. So how does that work for you?
It's kind of the anti-Leanne. What I did both times is I read the script a lot, and I write out my lines on note cards without any TV or podcasts going on, so my brain is solely focused on what my words are. That helped me memorize it partway. Then I have to try and figure out, and sometimes I even ask people, what is this character? So what I've come up with for Ellie is, unlike the movies, I'm cold, I'm cool, and I totally own my power. And I'm not evil like some people. Okay, I am evil, but I will admit to it. And there's not a ton of plotting and backstabbing, unlike some people.
Not a ton.
I mean, you do send Olaf to kill the king. Yes, Olaf is in the play, by the way.
I think you mean an animated snowman who has no resemblance to a copyrighted character.
That's right.
Disney is going to get you guys.
Yeah, I know. Disney is so listening to this right now, I'm sure.
Yeah. Also, I'm channeling a little bit of Becca. Camp Woody, you know what I mean. Cabin Strong!
Oh, okay. All right, I guess we're at me, okay. So, last year was my first play, and I think I had very similar characters. Oh, thank you, Lydia. To, like, the insanity. I think people know that's what I specialize in, the insanity. the feminine insanity, go crazy, kill. I think Cinderella is just all that. So when it came to the character, people are like, why do you like villain characters so much? I like the idea of backstorying them and empathizing with them to understand how they got there. And that's where you get such dramatic performances, is really when you can emotionally connect and really understand, like, why the character feels the way they feel. Like, Cinderella doesn't end up the way she is because of nothing. She really doesn't. That's, I think, the best and most interesting part about playing a character. And that's what I do with every role I play. Yeah, I think I'm going to stop there.
Yeah, it's important. Like, it's when you have a likable character or a funny character, it's easy to like them, you know, and it's easy to kind of sympathize with them. Mm-hmm. But when you're playing a legit evil or much more and a mean girl, you still, as an actor, you have to find that place where you like them.
Yeah, you have to coexist with it in your mind. Where if I met you, I would absolutely hate you so much. But man, I empathize with you. Like, you're weeping, you're crying, you're losing your mind. I empathize with you.
Lydia, again, this should be going to Mars, but building on what you said, Kylie. This is the anti-Leanne, so I'm getting there, but it's still harder for me to embrace that character because it's just not... This is my second play, too. It's just trying to figure it out what this character is since it's completely not me.
Yeah, characters outside of the comfort zone are definitely also... And I think we might, if anyone else feels that way, they might address that, too.
And those are the ways that you grow. Mm-hmm. When you take on a character that you don't identify with, that's... And when you're done, oh my gosh, you will feel...
It's so much rewarding. Better.
Marge, you've done a few shows.
I think with characterization... Well, I read a lot of books, which means
nerd.
I look at a lot of characters, but it's different from watching movies because you have to visualize it in your head yourself. So with that, I don't know. If you watch movies or whatever, you could see something.
But reading helps you get into that space?
I want to... Not really, but I guess reading, it shows how different characters can be acting different, and because I'm visualizing it in my head, I'm kind of making it up myself, so...
I don't know. It's, like, up to interpretation. You get a lot more leeway than with movies, too.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
The other day, I completely zoned out my parents when they were asking me to set the table because I didn't even realize they were talking. I was so into the book I was reading.
Also, different people, especially with books, they can interpret them differently. So there could be a simple story like Little Red Riding Hood and somebody could take it, don't go outside. And then another person could just not talk to strangers.
and that's what's great about theater, because as a director, I have an interpretation of how I see characters. You guys get to live them, so you bring your own interpretations. So we have to work together to find that space that works, and then you have to find out how your characters work.
Yeah,
with
the dynamics are definitely
else.
The most
yeah.
interesting part of characterization.
Could,
I'd say
you could read this play and read Cinderella, Belle, and Ellie, the Snow Queen. As and even Snow White to an extent, as kind of for the same kinds of characters, but they're very starkly different when you get into interpretation and physicality and things like that. Mm-hmm. Caitlin, so you have a very difficult character to play, I think. Yes.
I play narrator, and like I have to be like, I have to talk really, really loud, and I have to talk slower, but I talk like really fast. I've found it hard, like, in the past, because when I auditioned for, like, Hannah, I auditioned because I thought that I'd be shy on stage, which I've later found out that I'm not shy on stage at all. So it's kind of hard. I accidentally leaned into more awkward part of her character than, like, mm-hmm. shy. And then also with Percival was really easy to do for some reason.
Oh, from Lord of the Flies.
Yeah. Although I kind of got like really attached to his character.
Aww.
And I was so sad after the last shut up, Mars. And I got like really sad after the last play.
That totally happens. It's a postpartum feeling. You know, mm-hmm. you've given birth to a character and you're really attached to it, and then you have to let it go. Sorry. I had to say that.
Oh, I want to add on to the narrator thing, like how it's a hard character. I think narrators are just hard characters.
Narrators are hard.
I had to play a narrator in Puffs, and that was the most out of my comfort zone thing I'd ever done.
Yeah. Narrator is not a throwaway character. You have to cast like some of your strongest people as a narrators. Yeah.
And you did really well. Also, to build on what Caitlin said again, I'm not sure Leanne entirely went away, because I drew a lot of my just antsy excitedness from her.
Yeah, a character doesn't really go away, I don't think. They're all just parts of you that come together in their own insane ways.
Right. Sometimes when you least expect it.
Yeah, like sometimes I still like, because I learned in like Lord of the Flies how like dramatically fake cry. So like randomly if I'm talking to my mom, I'll start going like, like she's like, no, Caitlin, you can't like, you can't go on a bike ride. It's 9:30 at night. Okay, but why, Mom? Why?
See, practical. We teach practical skills.
Yeah, I mean, it's worked a few times. They've been like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you like actually kind of like, oh no, I'm faking it.
But use your power ethically.
I am.
Use it for good. Esme, you've been in a few shows. Sorry, I had to change out headphones.
Honestly, for me, I just have to learn how to die well, because most of the characters and plays that I've done, I've died.
Oh, yeah, you were executed last year.
Oh, yeah, the white rabbit. You died.
Yeah, I was beheaded last year, and I'm being beheaded again this year. So I just have to learn how to die.
Be careful, you'll be typecast.
Oh, no.
Honestly, I'm fine with it. I'm only pretending to die.
We will now only choose plays in which someone is beheaded and cast Esme. That's our...
We will not.
I feel like Jared's still like he's borderline typecasting me at this point, almost.
Well, I don't know. You were Tweedledee last year or Tweedledum?
Tweedledee.
So Tweedledee, which was had some issues. You're the flower was like
I hated her.
So snarky, but then completely different with a narrator. So you were the narrator in Puffs, and that was a huge...
That was such a switch. I was like, oh, prop cues. Yeah. Voice. Now I need to characterize it, too.
Yeah, yeah. And then back to... Oh, and then you were the evil... Was it the evil queen?
I was the old crone.
The old crone.
Oh, she was off the rails, man. I loved her.
Old crone in Next Step Dance, Snow White performance. So
yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, you just got to get, you should ask for, when you go in for auditions, especially with me, now that you've all worked with me many times, you know, ask for something to be challenged with, or if you want to stretch, or if you just want to take a show and say, you know what, I think I just want to do this one easy and do a nice show. Bradley, your process, so your first play was also last summer with me when we did The Doctor in Wonderland.
Doctor.
So how has your process kind of developed over the past year after doing Puffs?
Honestly, like, it hasn't changed all too much. Like, still kind of just existing. This is my first one where I'm actually, like, somewhat of a big role, so I'm still just, like, I'm getting more time for characterization instead of just, like, oh, going from some, like, well, I'm a announcer for like a game. To suddenly, like, oh, I'm an incredibly like confident. I'm the best dude. You know,
I think accents are the best.
Honestly, yeah, they can really add a lot to the character because, sure, they have different like they might say words in a different order, or they might talk louder or lower, but if they all sound like the same person, it really kind of takes you out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to add, I completely agree. Every one of my characters has a different voice, and it also, I think if you play multiple characters, very easy to separate them with it, too.
I'm a bit disappointed with the way, like, I haven't really found a good voice for Ellie yet, only maybe a little bit of Valley Girls, but not, that's stolen from Becca with a B, so...
Becca Witherby. So I'll tell you a story because when I was a freshman in high school, we did Little Shop of Horrors. Have you seen Little Shop of Horrors? And I wasn't in it. I was a crew on that one because I was a freshman at a brand new school and was scared of all of these beautifully talented people. But anyway, so but I was working on the show, and the guy who played the dentist, very iconic character. He didn't find his character until Final Dress. Mm. Like, he would literally just go up, and his name is Billy, and he would just say his lines as Billy. You know, he'd try to do his best, but he never could just find that voice, that physicality, whatever. And then something happened between two of our final dresses, and it just clicked. And then... and then he went out there, and it was, as a freshman in high school, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing that I've ever seen, and I want to be this guy. And he's a senior, you know, and do what he does. But what works, or what was good about it though, is that we had a good director and a great cast that was like, you're gonna find it, right? It's gonna come.
Yeah.
Maybe it's when those lights and you hear the clapping, maybe that's what it is that just gives you that extra thing that you need to carry out a performance. So it always gets to the place where we need it. And so let's see, what has been your favorite part of the production itself so far? Because we're doing a condensed. We're only working on this for 3 weeks. We're only working on it for 30 hours. We're only rehearsing for 30 hours before we put this play on. That sounds nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your favorite part of those 30 hours so far?
I'll answer first. I think just there's certain scenes where I'm like, I cannot not laugh during the scene. Like, I'm just standing there, and I'm like, it's either a line I'm going to say or someone else is going to say it. Just, I think the charming Smeagol and King stuff, like, all of that, like, how could I not laugh? It's just a huge try not to laugh challenge for me, you know.
Or the improv dancing.
Oh, yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. There is an interpretive dance sequence.
it's quite literal torture.
I mean, also
that's probably the best dancing I've ever seen.
Shut up, Charmin. All right. I think the other great thing is with every script, I love seeing what lines I can slide in or what jokes I can make, especially in a show where we have to cut stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's also my favorite part, is just, hey, what can I throw in that's funny, but also I won't get yelled at? Like, you know, I guess I said something. It was something about a ball to Prince Charming. Like, just stuff like that, you know?
That's
fine.
And I always, as a director and an actor, I always like that. You know, little things that you can throw in there to try. It's almost like you're intentionally trying to throw your acting partner off their game, you know, a little bit, and see if they're actually really listening, mm-hmm. to see if they're really paying attention. Because that's what good actors do. Good actors listen, right, to each other. So, yeah, I do. There's some actors that, oh gosh, no, they want the script, they want the words, and do not divert from the words at all. So you gotta learn who's who. But I think we have a good crew that is like, we're gonna roll with it and have fun and kind of see what comes up.
Great idea, Jared. Oh, why don't we all go around and say our favorite line that we say?
Yes. Ooh, okay. Think about it.
Oh,
I'm gonna give you a couple seconds. Think about your favorite line. Caitlin Smartin brought a script.
Crap.
Oh, everybody pulled out their script. Oh my gosh, you guys are amazing. Look at these actors. Okay, so Bradley, what's your favorite line from the script?
My favorite line easily has to be one that I say to Smeagol after he tells me that I don't pay him, to which I respond with, that's because I don't want to spoil you. Like the people who eat things.
I
am. That's a good one. Esme?
So it's going to either be one that I threw in because it's funny. That is, ooh, shiny.
Oh, yeah.
Or, ooh, something shiny. Or one of my lines as Snow White saying, but I am sweet and innocent. I don't know why.
And you're not.
It's funny.
And you're not. Caitlin, favorite narrator line?
Hang on.
Oh, we got 1 minute. We got 1 minute.
Is it okay if I say two?
Quick.
Okay, so the first one is, at that very moment, however, Belle was landing on the south coast of England with her own army of Frenchies. And then French Prince says, I'm sorry, that's a little insulting. And I said, oh, sorry, Belle's landing on the south coast of Great Britain with her own army of Frenchies.
Britain.
And then another line that I, like, literally can't get past without giggling is, it's a very sad day for sea creatures as they committed mass suicide on the beaches of England.
And then, yes, all the sea creatures die. And it's pretty bad.
And then I throw a fish.
Oh, yeah.
Mars, what'd you get?
I love the elderly. They're so spunky.
All right. My favorite is when I'm talking to the king and I'm like, I love you, like the convicted felon loves his ex-wife. That one, I don't know why I'm so composed when I say it.
My favorite line is either when I'm talking to Prince Charming, especially the part that goes, if you don't like how I execute my sisters, then you can say it in front of everyone. If not, shut your mouth, get up here to the altar, and marry me. The other favorite line is, Daddy, air smooches! Mwah!
That's my least favorite line, by the way.
It's my favorite line because it embarrasses him so much.
It does.
I like, advanced and apologized, like, hey, this is going to be really bad. And just...
Okay, well, thanks. That was fun. Thanks to Bradley, Esme, Caitlin, Mars, Kylie, and Lydia. We also have Sarah Bell and Augie in the studios too. Thanks for coming and talking to us about the show and art and acting and everything. Maybe you should give all of our listeners air smoochies.
Oh, air smoochies! Oh, mwah! Mwah!
No, that's too traumatic. Go for it.